The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. This week, most likely bowing to pressure from the U.S. government, but it could be for totally other reasons. We don't know. We don't know the exact reasons. This week, the Embassy of Ecuador, which has done an amazing public service to the world, which is allowing Julian Assange to stay there and avoid whatever ridiculous prosecution the U.S. government wants to bring, they cut off his internet. It seems that the government has a major problem, and you know, politically connected people have a major problem with us looking into what they're doing privately, but they can't seem to get enough of looking at what we do privately. With me right now is Rob Lapham. He is running for Congress in Florida. We're going to talk a little bit about how we can turn the tables, what we can do to restore our privacy and the dignity that goes along with it. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hi, Arvind. Glad to be with you today.
Rob, let me ask you this. We have this odd situation right now in which public figures who, you know, those are the people who should realistically expect to have their private lives scrutinized, if anybody. Not that I think they should, but if anybody's going to have their private lives scrutinized, it's going to be a public figure. They are having huge difficulties with the idea that you have folks like WikiLeaks, Assange, all these people tapping into what they're doing, but they can't seem to stop looking at our private lives. How, if you're elected, what are you going to do to turn the table? Or honestly, do you think the table should be turned?
Well, they do need to be turned. I think it's primarily an educational, or certainly there is an educational aspect to it. As far as individuals, we're talking about our Fourth Amendment rights, and we ought to be safe from search and seizure unless a warrant is issued. And and frankly, with the Patriot Act, FISA court, and frankly, illegal government mechanisms, I think our rights are violated all too often. Mm-hmm. And Benjamin Franklin said it, and I wrote it down, said, "They who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety." And I think when I say education, I suspect that too many of us maybe tend to accept the fact that, oh, well, the Patriot Act is there. It happened after 9/11. We need to have all of this additional so-called security. And we gave up a bunch of rights in that act, aspects of which are unconstitutional. And mm-hmm. I also think that when there is a disaster, such as the idiot shooting up the club in Orlando a couple of months ago, or the other folks in San Bernardino, California, about 6 months back, I think these things have blown out of proportion, and there is a perception on the part of some public that, oh my heavens, we have these terrible things happening, and we need more SWAT teams and more militarization of police, and we can overlook our Fourth Amendment rights. I think it's dangerous. And I also think we don't have an accurate perception of what is going on when we do have violent activities. And it's because the CNNs or Fox News or whoever it may be is kind of on the scene with the camera immediately. If you, by contrast, go back 700 or 800 years to, you know, our favorite conqueror of all time, Genghis Khan, he was his people, his generals and so forth, were estimated to have killed 40 million people, which was at the time about 10% of the whole world's population. And he wasn't into peaceful negotiation and smooth diplomacy or any of those kinds of things. But the reason, and I would guess you might ask and take a sample of people, probably fewer than 10% or 1 in 10 of people you would interview would be aware of the phenomenal violence that took place in past eras, such as Genghis Khan. And we tend to think, oh, what's going on today is just terrible. It really isn't. And I do think that we need to have a mindset to accept that that we don't want to go overboard on security. We can't. That's why the Fourth Amendment is there. And we are taking some kind of risk in terms of allowing people to retain their privacy. And therefore, there are a few people here and there over the years who are going to slip through the cracks. And we take that risk, and we should take that risk. We can, of course, ameliorate the risk by arming ourselves. And then we get into Second Amendment issues, which I'm not sure that's the purpose of your of the program today.
You know, but the thing is, those all go together. I mean, it's two very different visions of what it means to be a human being. On one vision, you have this idea that, yes, we are individuals and we're strong, and there are things that threaten us, but we threaten those things right back. And that's one vision. It's a powerful vision. It's the vision that I think underlies the psyches and souls of many great entrepreneurs and visionaries, some of the most courageous people in human history. And then there's this other vision, which says that a human being is someone that needs to be weak and desperate and helpless and afraid and needs to have the government protect them from everything. And if the government happens to take a whole pile of their money and make stuff more expensive and make education work and worse and make their lives worse, that's totally okay. But I think that what you're talking about is I think extremely well connected, which is that either we're people who are strong and have individual dignity on one side, or people that are basically just sort of well looked after or okay looked after livestock on the other side. And so, I mean, I think that's an absolutely true connection there. Now, when
sure.
when
mean,
people
I'm sorry,
go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, I interjected and I shouldn't have.
Oh, no. What I was going to say, we have people who say, listen, I'm not doing anything wrong. Why would I care if the government wants to read my emails or listen to my phone lines? Go ahead and read. I mean, what are they missing? I mean, what's wrong with that viewpoint?
Slippery slope. I mean, I don't recall that I've written anything in the last week or two, or maybe the last year or two, that is incriminating, and I'm certainly not worried about it in principle as far as something that I have written. But where do you draw the line? It's a slippery slope. The mm-hmm. government has no business. It's the constitutional amendment, and we have the right to be secure in our private communications, and if we simply ignore it, we may suppose that the government will continue to encroach on our rights. And how do you turn that around later on? I mean, you have to be vigilant ahead of the game. And if you don't put your views about privacy on the line, make noise, exert pressures on our federal officials, including those who we elect to Congress and others, then we really aren't going to have much of a defense when something happens to you or to me that we don't like because our privacy has been invaded. And at that point, you're really too late to be effective. One has to challenge this government usurpation. I guess that's not a word of authority. Because if we don't, we're all going to be really disadvantaged. It's kind of 1984 all over again.
Let's look at some of the other amendments, because I think I think that people haven't really understood the idea of an amendment, because it's not okay to get rid of an amendment just because you individually don't happen to you need it right now. First Amendment, freedom of speech. Okay, fine. It's all the freedom to make polite speech, but it's mostly a freedom for controversial speech. Let's say that you don't have something controversial to say right now. Let's say the only things you want to say is, I really like the way the government's handling things, and I like America, and that's all you want to say right now. Or maybe you don't even have anything political to say at all. It would be insane to say that just because you don't have anything to say right now, that you are totally fine with us getting rid of the First Amendment. I don't think that even a tiny percent of Americans would get behind that type of logic.
I would agree with that. And I mean, all of us want the ability, regardless of whether or not we use it, to frankly criticize our government. If government doesn't have any pushback, then those in power are going to assume more and more of it, and we end up with a virtual dictatorship.
And this is not, I mean, people are like, oh man, libertarians are all, this is not, I mean, this is what government has a track record of doing. The income tax was not proposed at something that was like 45% of your income. It was like a 2% income tax. And people fought it bitterly. Because they said, listen, if we...
I think 2% was one of the proposals. I think as enacted, I think Wilson, I think it was a straight 10% across the board. Well, what finally got passed. But you're right. There was no intent at the time, although politicians and others who know how these things go could reasonably foresee that the rates would continue to increase. Mm-hmm. And with the work that was put into establishing the right for the federal government to collect an income tax, the framework is there, and it's difficult. It's a major effort for those who would repeal, for those who would get rid of the IRS, and I'm one of them, got to repeal the 16th Amendment. It took a lot of work to get that amendment passed. I think there was subterfuge, and I don't think the politicians were being honest with the public, and it's going to be a real tough road to hoe to turn that around. And I very much doubt that Congress will be leading the charge there. It might be through a constitutional convention initiated by the states. As we know, that's never actually happened, but the provision is there in the Constitution. Creeping government is again, the more it is established, the more difficult it is to break it up. The government with the power of taxation, frankly, has the money, the wherewithal, the budget to hold to their position and make it much more difficult for those of us who articulate and believe in freedom to prevail on income tax or, frankly, any other issue.
And what's especially troubling, I want to mention this right before we run out of time, what's especially troubling right now is that just as it's almost like the second that technology got to the level that it actually could do mass surveillance is when the government started doing mass surveillance. There was no way to do it in the 1960s, so they didn't really push for it. But as soon as it became an option, they pushed for it. And as it becomes an option, become more precise, you know, they're going to push for more. Good news, we can push back. We can increase liberty, and we can increase our own privacy and dignity. Now, Rob, if somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, where should they go?
Arvin, I'd be delighted if they would have a look at my website, www.robforcongress, that's spelled out in full, robforcongress.org.
Awesome. Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Thanks, Arvin. You have a great afternoon.
Guys, you've heard what Rob has to say about this. You know there's so many libertarian candidates who want to do the same thing, but guess what? They can't do it all by themselves. They're going to need some help. And if you believe these ideas, that's someone whose help they're going to need. That's your help. You want to learn more. You want to get involved with one of the most exciting revolutions happening in modern politics. Please go to lp.org. Find out how to get involved in a campaign in your state. In fact, you might even decide to run for office yourself. And that first step is up to you, lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York, Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. You know, as government privacy infringement has gotten out of hand, it's really taken two forms. Some of it's deliberate infringement. Some of it is just incompetence. You know, I mean, the Clinton emails got out through WikiLeaks and through various ways, and obviously that wasn't intentional. But guess what? As careless as they are with their own stuff, they're a lot more careless with your stuff. So with me to discuss the ways in which technology relates to privacy is Dave Cork. He is an IT professional with almost 20 years of experience, and he's running for Iowa House District 70 as a Libertarian. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing good. All right, let's get to this. I have a bunch of questions. The first question is how does current technology and the way that it's changing relate to the ways in which government should or should not or cannot infringe on individual privacy?
Well, there's a couple different aspects of that. You know, if you don't really take time to take care of your personal data, it's very easy for just about anybody to find out what they want to find out about you. You know, if you post stuff on Facebook, it's not that difficult to find. Well, you know, that's the first and foremost. If you don't take care where you're going when you surf the internet, you end up at a bad site and, you know, sites that are infected with malware. And next thing you know, they're putting Trojans and malware and crapware on your computer and they're harvesting your data without knowing it. So that part boils down to personal responsibility. At the same time, if it's easy for, you know, some guy sitting in his mom's basement that's got nothing better to do to find this information out about you, think how easy it is for the government to find this information about you, because they've got effectively limitless resources. So, you know, there's the legal aspect of what is the government's responsibility to not infringe upon your right to privacy. But there's also the personal responsibility, which you can't abdicate if you're going to call yourself a personal privacy advocate. And, you know, the personal responsibility is encrypt your hard drive. You know, don't say things by electronic means that you don't want other people to hear.
Now, let's talk about some of these tools, because, you know, it is interesting. There's these two parts of privacy. You know, one, you know, we need to change these laws. We need to defund the NSA warrantless mass surveillance. But guess what? They're going to find some other mass surveillance. So there's this other form that we have, which is to make it just harder for them to do. What are some, I mean, if you were going to give some sort of pro tips, what are some ways you would recommend that people blockade their information from being accessible by the government?
Encrypt your hard drive. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you how to do that. If you're interested, you can do the research yourself. But I will say, it's not that difficult. Encrypt your email. And, again, you know, it's not that difficult. The problem inherent with encrypting your email is that the other person who's receiving your email has to be able to decrypt it. Therefore, it's a little bit more difficult. But, you know, at that point, it becomes a personal choice. Do I want to make this convenient for the person receiving the email, or do I want to protect my privacy? And that's a matter of personal choice.
Now, one thing... Oh, go ahead.
I just read an interesting article about how the FBI did a search, and they forced the individual to provide his thumbprint to unlock his phone. So, and the court said, oh yeah, go ahead, So if you're a privacy advocate, don't use a thumbprint to unlock your phone. Use a pen.
Mm-hmm. And see, those are like the little things. It's what you referenced earlier. You mentioned that a big part of what allows the government to do this is resources. And so there's two ways that you can squeeze that. One side, we can talk about simply reducing their resources. Let me just, as an example, right now you're running for the Iowa State House of Representatives. Is that what it's called in Iowa? Does it have a different name?
That's correct. It's the Iowa House.
Okay. And if you're there, would you pass legislation that would reduce the amount of funds that Iowa has by reducing taxes or reducing regulations or whatever?
You know, I'm not going to make a blanket statement saying, yes, I promise to do that, because as soon as I make a promise to do that, the other legislators are going to throw in pork, and I'm going to disagree with the pork, and they're going to say, oh, he went back on his promise.
Mm-hmm.
So, realistically, I'm going to have to look at any individual piece of legislation and try to determine whether the overall benefits of that piece of legislation outweigh the negatives.
Sure, makes sense. But we could at least say that there's at least a likelihood that you might work that if the opportunity presented itself without a huge amount of drawbacks to reduce taxes, there's a reasonable likelihood that you probably would. Would that be fair?
Oh yeah. Oh right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so there's always exceptions but it is a little rough sometimes to be able to say
right.
Likely.
The big problem is that when you make little soundbite promises like that, they always come and bite you in the tail.
that can happen. So in that situation, that's an example of both at the state and national level. If the government simply just has fewer resources, it's going to be harder for them. But on the other side that you're pointing out is we as individuals can make the other part harder. In other words, by just using a pin and refusing to give the pin, based on your Fifth Amendment rights, to just make them have to burn up more resources. And at some point, there are only so many resources.
Right.
Let me ask you some of this. Are there state level things that interact with privacy, or is it right now, would you say, primarily federal, or is it mixed, or what?
Well, it really depends on where you're coming from. If you step outside of technology, state and federal level has, exceptions to the Fourth Amendment for searching your car, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of chaps my hide that as soon as I step into my car, I have less protection against unreasonable search and seizure.
Mm-hmm.
Again, stepping outside of technology, I have a privacy right by virtue of the fact that I don't have to testify against my wife in a criminal case in court. But mm-hmm. I don't have that same protection for my children. That kind of chaps my hide.
Mm-hmm.
But
now, go ahead.
Back in the technology area, mm-hmm. Based on my anecdotal experience, I say a large portion of the problem is at the federal level.
Mm-hmm. Let's actually talk about it. It's interesting to look at both of those things. Some of the things that you mentioned, these Fourth Amendment exceptions, which to me is nonsensical. I don't know first of all, you can look at it as if purely from a constitutional level, there is not something that says, no reasonable search and seizures except if you're driving. That's not a real thing.
Well, in all fairness, they didn't have cars back then.
Yeah, but they had carriages. It wasn't that, you could be searched relentlessly if you're on a horse.
Right, I'm just playing devil's advocate there.
Yeah, for sure. Now, the other part of that is to me, maybe the Fourth Amendment expresses the right of privacy, but it's not what created the right of privacy. Is an inherent fundamental human right. It's not
it's actually come about by cobbling together various pieces of the Bill of Rights, and those pieces cobbled together have been collectively termed a right to privacy.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good way to put it. Now, let me ask you this. So if we're looking at all these different pieces, would you, as a legislator, advocate to get rid of these, quote, exceptions to the Fourth Amendment?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. the right to privacy. My big thing is due process here. I'm thinking about civil asset forfeiture, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the right to your private property, and the government should be forced to go through due process before your assets are taken away, but they circumvent this right. I vehemently oppose civil asset forfeiture, and I'm a huge proponent of individual rights and privacy. That's actually the fundamental reason that I've chosen to run. The Democrats and the Republicans both whittle away at our individual rights and try to circumvent our individual responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about what some of that would look like. I mean, what would, you know, if when people vote for you, for example, I mean, what are they getting? Is it something where you would, you know, advocate, you know, in the media and the press? Is it something where you would work to sponsor legislation to remove the possibility of civil asset forfeiture? How do you see your role as a legislator as an opponent of civil asset forfeiture?
Oh, I would absolutely propose legislation that just completely outlaws it at the state level. And I would probably go a step further and attempt to get that seized property returned. You know, I'm also very strongly against eminent domain abuse. Now, I would say I'm not a 100% pure play libertarian. I don't believe, for example, in privatizing roads. But the government is far too free and liberal with their use of eminent domain. It just absolutely chaps my hide. The Bakken pipeline is coming through my state because the government used eminent domain to take property from a private individual and turn around and give it to a private company. That's just absolutely wrong.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, I would love to talk about just all of these things for pretty much forever, but we are kind of out of time. So before we end this segment, I do want to ask this. If somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, how can they follow you? So they follow you on Facebook? Do you have a website? How should people follow you?
They're going to have to find me on Facebook.
Okay.
I am running a private campaign. I am neither soliciting nor accepting campaign donations, unlike my competitor, who has $35,000 in donation this year. I've spent a grand total of $20 just so I can get little business cards to hand out to potential constituents. You can look me up at facebook.com/cork4iowa. That's C-O-R-K for Iowa. And the word four is spelled out, by the way.
Awesome. Dick, thank you so much for being on the show today.
No sweat.
Guys, just finished talking with Dave Cork. See, that's what you get with libertarians. You get people who are passionate about improving freedom, passionate about protecting privacy and dignity. And with Dave, you're getting a bonus of somebody who really understands the technology, who can not just be your advocate, but also your advisor, someone who can help you while he's working to get rid of these heinous laws. He can also help you fight them as an individual. I think that's a great thing. Now, if you want to learn more about candidates like Dave, if you want to become a candidate like Dave, if you want to downsize government, please go to lp.org. I mean, there are so many different ways you can get involved. You can work at booths, social media, you can do phone calls, all kinds of things. Whatever you like, there's going to be something, whatever skills you like the most, there's going to be some way that those can benefit the cause of liberty. And if you're ready to do that, again, the website is lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live. The leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day, we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control, and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling, whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. My next guest is running in my state. He's Jason Wunder. He's running for Congress in Maryland's 8th District. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, Arvin, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about privacy. Let's talk about, now, what do you think needs to happen? What would you be sponsoring legislation to make happen? What changes do you see as necessary in the way in which government relates to our privacy?
Well, I think you actually touched on it earlier when I was listening, is I think we need to stop thinking about I have nothing to hide today and start thinking about what do I want to hide 20 years from now or 30 years from now. You know, I mean, rights like that are chipped away little by little. And maybe it's okay to criticize somebody of a higher office today, but what's it going to be 20 years from now if we give up the right to privacy, even just a little bit? Mm-hmm. So I think I would sponsor legislation, much like the gentleman said earlier, that would strengthen all privacy on not just your papers, but computers, what you say on your own property, and how you say it.
Now, one of the biggest areas, one of the biggest enablers, I should say, of these just unbelievable incursions on our natural right to privacy has been the Patriot Act, because it allows these mass blanket warrants, these warrantless wiretaps. It allows people to go to sort of circumvent the entire due process that is built into the very fabric of our criminal justice system. Would you advocate or sponsor legislation to get rid of that Patriot Act?
Absolutely. I would actually do as much as I could to strengthen the Fourth Amendment to eliminate the Patriot Act. Because it is an invasion into your what the Founding Fathers said, your house and papers. These blanket, what do you want to say, these, I can't think of the term for some reason.
Yeah, the mass warrants, whatever they call those?
Yeah, so the warrants, these blanket warrants where they just say, okay, everyone that has a Verizon phone, we're going to go ahead and tap. Well, to me, it's just ridiculous that you would even consider doing that. Because that means everybody. And I mean, who's to say that they don't just start putting cameras on your property or starting to find out where you drive your vehicle, how fast you're driving your vehicle? I mean, at what point then? And to circumvent the course, you know, I mean, it only takes, and Rand Paul said this many times, it takes less than a few minutes to get a judge on the phone for a warrant in the event of a hostile situation. So to circumvent that makes no sense to me. It's just the further grabbing of power by big government that is just continuing on with my generation and the generation before me.
Now, what's especially true about what you just said, and what's especially troubling about that, is when people talked about a warrant, what they meant was that the warrant had to be issued based on something specific about the specific person that you're going to be searching their property. The Constitution didn't say that you can't search anybody ever. It said that you need to have some specific thing about that specific person. Now, you can't just say everyone with a Verizon phone is now a suspect. That's preposterous. Without knowing what even the crime they're suspected of.
Now, one
go ahead, please.
I was going to say, one of the things that the Patriot Act has been used for far more than for terrorism has been for all these victimless crimes. Do you think that this could be even seen as like a two-sided argument, where on one side, we need less warrantless surveillance, and two, we need less things classified as crimes in the first place?
I advocate for the elimination of all drug laws that involve victimless crimes, when we talk about. It is. It's the idea that if there's no victim and you're only harming yourself, that you have a right to your own body and to do with it what you please. So I think if you eliminate a lot of those issues, that you eliminate a lot of crime just in general. And then they put up these cameras in these drug hot zones that they talk about. They put cameras up on the street corners to monitor drug activity. But what they really use it for is just to watch you and see what everyone's doing.
It's true that the government is definitely starting to do that, to enforce these petty laws. But here's a key thing, and I think this is really important. When you look at those laws, whether it's things like the Patriot Act that are used for, you know, marijuana primarily, I mean, that's the biggest use of them so far, or the security cameras, which a lot of them are used for traffic just to, you know, rack up ticket fines and whatnot. When you see these, we realize that there's an underlying principle, which is they can only last if they can fund themselves. They only last if they break even. They only last if you can steal enough money from marijuana users through civil asset forfeiture and whatnot to allow the process to continue. So would you say, I don't want to make this leading question. What do you view as the relationship between law enforcement and raising money? Do you think law enforcement should be involved in this kind of indirect taxation or kind of pretty direct taxation?
No, I don't think that they should. And what's funny is you mentioned that is that listed when you talk about camera lights, when they monitor areas that people are traveling to,
mm-hmm.
and they want to make sure you're not speeding, it's listed as a revenue builder versus mm-hmm. a deterrent in the book.
That's
and the
actually
idea
very
is it generates
true.
Revenue.
And we're talking about, I mean, it's something that goes into whichever state you live in. It doesn't matter what state you live in. Now, if you live in Maryland like Jason and I, you know, that it's definitely true, but it's true in every state that those cameras are used to raise money. That's all they're used for. They're not used for public safety. They're used for money. And what's especially funny about that to me is the Federal Department of Transportation put out a best use practices for those cameras. Right at the top of the list, they recommend to not use the cameras to raise money. You know what I mean?
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it is. It's just dipping how much more can they take. And when I talk to people, we talk about, well, what price do you think you should pay in taxes? And they say, well, I think 20%, 30%. I mean, you pay close to 60% once you factor in everything. And these are tax generators. They're revenue. They're designed not to deter you from speeding or running a red light, but they're designed to generate money so that they can use it to fund other projects to grow government even more.
What's especially interesting is, you know, I mentioned that sometimes the state governments are violating the recommendations of the federal government. But at other times, we even have the county governments violating state law. In other words, you have situations in which cities have literally been found violating the laws of the state and been forced to actually give back a lot of the money that they did from the red light cameras and related cameras. So, you know, kind of keeping all that in mind, would you advocate for a scaling back of the entire process of using these various cameras to raise revenue? All right, I think we might have lost Jason over there.
stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Psych Up Live with host Dr. Suzanne Phillips is an insider's glimpse at a life from a psychological perspective. It's a look at what matters to us. Why do we laugh? How do we cope with stress? Are men and women really that different? What is it about our relationships? How are they formed? How they work out? And why they sometimes don't? Every week is something new to engage you. Psych Up Live is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll turn up your perspective on life.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. With me right now, I want to take a little bit of time to answer some of the questions that people sent in over the last week. Some of these questions are from last week that we didn't get to, and we have a few new ones as well. Right now, we have a few different questions. We have a question from Joe Stauffacher. I probably pronounced that wrong, and my apologies. And the question is, what does the Libertarian Party want to do about healthcare? How do we look at healthcare? And it's one of my favorite topics because you can see how much better free market healthcare is just by looking at free market healthcare. Right now, if you want to see where we have a free market in healthcare, we do. One of our most complex, difficult, advanced operations anywhere. And it's also, strangely enough, one of the only operations whose price is going down. It's plummeting. On the other side, when you look at government-subsidized healthcare, where there's no reason to lower the price, or government insurance-funded healthcare or insurance-backed health, when there's no reason to lower the price, what do you see? The price going up. You see the price of EpiPen going up to a few hundred dollars. Where, I mean, EpiPen is what? It's a syringe with a spring, and all of a sudden, it's a few hundred dollars for that. On the other side, the significantly more complex operation than a spring attached to a syringe of laser eye surgery, science fiction stuff. I mean, unbelievable technology here. That's literally curing nearsightedness. I mean, or sometimes even more like curing astigmatism. I mean, it cures so many eye problems. Doesn't cost that much more. So in the free market of healthcare, the true free market, where you don't have all this insurance and government stuff involved, the price for such a complex surgery, about $1,000, maybe a little bit more, not much more. And just a little bit less than that, in the government world of healthcare, you have a spring attached to a syringe for just a little bit less than that. It's gotten so bad that literally spring syringe and laser eye surgery cost not that much far apart from each other. Yeah, right now the laser eye surgery is a little bit more expensive. You know what I bet? I bet before long it's going to be cheaper. That's a fact. And so libertarians want that free market in healthcare. We don't want private. We don't want insurance running everything. We don't want Medicare running everything. We don't want Medicaid running everything. We want a free market where companies compete on cost. Now, sometimes people say, listen, free markets don't have the same level of equality. And that's some truth to that. It's not, but the thing is, equality is not what people are after. When somebody has a serious disease, they don't say, man, I hope that the treatment I get is equal to what a rich person gets. That's not what they say. They say, man, I hope this cures me. If you get a cure and it works in 7 days, and the rich person's cure works in 6.5 days, but at the end of it, you're, you know, not dead, yeah, most people are going to be pretty much okay with that. So yes, the free market in its very nature brings inequality, but it also brings improvement of quality. It brings some inequality, but it also brings a lot of quality. And that's what actually matters. No one cares about equality about most things. They just want their things to be good. Listen, I have a pretty nice car. It's nicer than some people's cars, and it is less nice than other people's cars. I don't hate my car because it's not as fast as a Lamborghini. I'm just glad that it's as fast as it is. I don't hate the fact that my car is not as luxurious as a Rolls Royce. I'm just really happy that it's as luxurious as it is. The threat, this buzzword of inequality that pro-government people use to fix everything is preposterous. Remember, equality is easy to have if you're happy making everybody equally in a bad situation. American education is equally bad pretty much everywhere. Public education, honestly, American private education, which is government regulated, is also equally pretty bad in most places. But that's not what people want. People want things to be better. And so the libertarian goal in healthcare, get the government out of it so that we have more quality, so that we have a higher value thing, so that we have healthcare that works. Let's look at some of these other questions over here. Kenny Lane asks, what are some of the differences between anarchists and libertarians? And I guess that's the difference between minarchists and anarchists. Listen, there are some differences, but the basic thing is this. We all work together to downsize government. We all want less government. We all want the same thing, which is to reduce the size of government. Kim Ruff asks, we have an LNC, but what do our executive director and other paid staffers do? Why do we choose Virginia as our headquarters instead of setting up a bunch of separate locations across the country? That's a really interesting question. And this is what I really love about working in the Libertarian Party. In terms of what do the executive director and paid staffers do in the Libertarian Party, I'll tell you what they do. They do a lot. They do everything. The amount of work that they do is the amount of work it would take 10 normal people to do. Why do they do it? Because they want less government. Listen, any of these people could literally double their salaries by working literally pretty much anywhere else. And these are highly, highly skilled people with skills that are highly in demand in politics and so many other areas. But they choose to work to downsize freedom. People in the Libertarian National Committee, people like me, we also work pretty hard. We don't get paid at all. We could get paid doing this pretty much anywhere else. But that's not what our goal is. Our goal isn't just to make a buck. Our goal is to increase personal freedom. But the thing I really like about working in the Libertarian Party, and why I think in many ways the Libertarian Party, even though that's not its primary goal, actually inadvertently ends up being an example of what I think good government can look like, is that it allows people to choose what they donate to. Listen, there are certain things that if it was voluntary, I would probably donate to in terms of things that the government does. I would probably donate more than I pay right now through taxes to improve the quality of roads. Why? Because I think that it's good to have roads that function, not the garbage we get from the government, functioning roads. Other people might not agree with me. But guess what? In a true libertarian ideal, it wouldn't make any difference. I would donate to the road pile. When there's enough money in the road pile, in the road fund, we pave some roads. The road funds with the modern sophistication could even donate money towards specific roads if you wanted to. Imagine that for a second. Imagine if you could choose where your money went. Think about the two parts of that. One, realistically, you'd probably spending more on the things that you actually care about than you do now. Because with roads, you're not spending more than like $10, $20 a year, realistically. That's how much you're paying in taxes for roads, a tiny amount. That tiny little amount, you know what you could pay? You could probably pay 40. You could probably pay 50 for much better roads if you're someone who drives or thinks that's important. But the other half of it is you would be not paying for the things that are damaging. If you were in that situation, if you could choose where your money went when you paid taxes, or you know, when you paid the new thing, voluntary, whatever, if you could say, listen, I simply don't think that this war in Syria is a good idea, I'm not paying for it. I don't think the war on drugs is a good idea, I'm not paying for it. Imagine if the entire drug war had a budget of $15 because only one person bothered to donate to it because as most likely as a joke. Maybe it would still be there, but it would be harmless. When you defund something, you defang it and you declaw it, and it can't create the problems that it does right now. Imagine the U.S. government wanted to go to war with yet another country, and no one donated. Well, they just wouldn't be able to go to war. On the other side, of course, if there was a legitimate threat to the U.S., I imagine that many people would donate a lot of money, many people would enlist, many people would join the armed forces, as has happened in every previous war that made any sense. Now, of course, during the Vietnam War, we had to have a big draft because everyone thought that was a stupid idea in the first place. And if things had been voluntary, that Vietnam War probably would have either never have happened in the first place or would have massively been downsized. The next question that somebody has is Emmanuel Sorrell is asking, what's libertarian policy on immigrants, on immigration? Well, that's a good question. It's a central question, and it really differentiates the way in which the Libertarian Party views things and the way that Republicans view things and Democrats view things. Libertarian stance on immigration, super simple. End welfare, open borders. Bam, that's it. As Gary Johnson says, security check, disease check, done. Why is a disease check important? Well, if you don't do a disease check, you could theoretically be creating a public health issue. But there's also libertarians that say, listen, even a disease check is not really necessary. But on the flip side, the no welfare is very important. You have people who've come to America, people who have created so many jobs, or whose kids have created so many jobs. I mean, so many of us, you know, you either have or wish you had one of those Bose noise-canceling headphones, but that name that looks as American as Sony is actually as not American as Sony. I mean, the founder's father came over here from another country entirely, came over from India. Think about how many jobs we gained from that type of skilled labor. Look at how many jobs are created every day by immigrant entrepreneurs. And we start to understand how great it is when we bring the best and brightest to America. The problem is that we've gotten a little bit away from that. We've forgotten that immigration is about bringing the best and brightest. And instead has kind of been using immigration as this new form of wealth redistribution. Now, wealth redistribution, in my view, is wrong in any form. And if you say, let's open the borders so that we can provide welfare and, you know, state college tuition and public education and Medicare care, well, then, yeah, a lot of libertarians oppose that because that's stupid. But if you say, let people come in here, start companies, create jobs, pay for their own things the way that every American should, not be a drain on anybody, not come over here when they're 75 and start collecting Social Security or these other antics that we see. That's not a type of immigration that libertarians get behind. But you come here, you create jobs, you spend money here, you help businesses. That's good for everyone. Listen, you have two ways of happening. Either you let people do jobs in America or the jobs are going to simply move to another country. Boeing just moved over to China. Why? Better business environment for them. But what if, just what if for a second, all those people who are now working at Boeing in China, what if they could work for Boeing in America? They would be spending, after they got their paycheck, they'd be spending it at American restaurants and American bookstores, American locations, helping the American economy. Right now, every single one of those workers spending their money Chinese businesses, because that's just where they physically have to be. I guarantee you roughly 100% of those workers would prefer to be in America. We just didn't give them the chance. We forced Boeing to have to leave to go to China instead of allowing them to say, listen, bring some workers over here. Let's make this happen. Let's do it in a way that benefits everybody. Now, if you want to make that happen, please go to lp.org. Thanks for listening today. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvin Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.